It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
All right, we're 2 days into our new season after the elections, and a big question, do you think that evangelicals have marginalized themselves? Do you think that we are relevant in society, that we are relevant politically? Does the world look at us as relevant? Now, those are not necessarily the same questions. Have we marginalized ourselves in this society? In light of the recent elections, did we make a major difference? Did the evangelical voice make a major difference? Were there evangelical candidates? Is the Tea Party associated with evangelicalism? Or basically, have we marginalized ourselves by just focusing on one or two social issues, and that's all that we're good for, and politicians don't care about us, and society doesn't care about us? What do you think? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You can weigh in, or you can go to our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, and weigh in there with your comments. And again, I appreciate the many comments that have been posted already. Okay. You say, how are they posted already? Well, because I asked the question a little bit before the show on our Facebook page, which will often give you a hint of where I'm going with the show, yet another reason to sign up there and, yes, become a fan of Ask Dr. Brown, because my friend page is totally filled. All right. I mentioned a couple of times when I debated my friend Rabbi Shmuley on Monday night about is homosexuality America's greatest crisis. My answer to the question was no. Our greatest crisis is our lack of knowledge and consciousness of God, which then devolves into every area of family life and society. That's our greatest crisis. And then heterosexual sin, heterosexual divorce has done more to destroy and undermine marriage than all forms of gay activism combined. And on top of that, homosexuality itself was not the issue. Gay activism is a serious issue and focused on that. But in the course of the debate, perhaps Rabbi Shmuley's major argument was that evangelicals have become obsessed with homosexuality and have thereby marginalized themselves in the public eye. And look at the role that evangelical voters had in keeping George Bush in office, getting him elected and then keeping him in office in the midst of unpopular wars, etc. And yet by 2008, they had no voice. They've been marginalized in the current elections. The Republicans are not talking about values at all. And because evangelicals have been marginalized by their obsession on homosexuality. And now, point blank, I completely reject the premise that there's an obsession on homosexuality. Point blank. There was a gay activist editor that was at the event. I invited him to the debate. And he asked that a survey be taken of the people in attendance at the debate, mainly evangelical Christians, and to say how many of them had contacted a senator, something to do with a marriage amendment. In other words, to say that marriage is the union of male and female. And my count was different than his, but it was a significant minority, okay? I'm quite sure it was way, way under half of the people, or maybe a third, maybe a quarter, I don't know. But it was a significant minority. Raised their hands. And then, you know, how many have contacted senators and so on about divorce laws? Basically nobody. Well, there's a reason for that. This doesn't take a rocket scientist. It's not because evangelicals are obsessed with homosexuality. It is because there is a national movement to legalize same-sex marriage, and people say, we don't want that to happen. We have enough other issues to deal with. We're not going to redefine marriage. So that's all that it comes down. I mean, it's not there's an obsession with that. You know, I mean, I'd give you 100 analogies, but I think just the straightforward evidence is clear enough. We weren't talking about this until gay activists tried to redefine marriage. We weren't going around saying there needs to be a constitutional amendment. There needs to be that. We need to. No one's talking about that. No one's talking about that. We continued to be talking about our own issues and problems. And just to be factual here for a minute. And I haven't answered the larger question, have evangelicals marginalized themselves from an obsession with homosexuality? Marginalized themselves in general? Have we marginalized ourselves in the society? I haven't answered that question yet. But the specific question, have we marginalized ourselves from an obsession with homosexuality? Of course, it's complete nonsense. There are things knocking at our door. There are attempts being made to redefine marriage. There are things being done through courts and taken out of the people's hands and votes, etc. And people say, no, we don't stand for that. And that, by the way, the idea of redefining marriage is outrageous. It is as outrageous as saying that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is now spelling instead of math. It's outrageous. And it is an attack on the very fundamental order that God created of male-female and male-female union and male-female family. But let's be realistic. I spoke for a number of years at Love One Out conferences that were put on by Focus on the Family. They're now sponsored by Exodus International, helping people dealing with same-sex attraction issues. I spoke at those a few times in terms of what was happening in the society at large and how the church could mobilize to make a difference. In point of fact, everybody participated in those conferences sacrificially. In point of fact, out of the dozens, and maybe there are 50 of these conscious that have helped, maybe 2 broke even. It was a financial drain on Focus on the Family. And people say, yeah, but Focus on the Family had a budget of like $130 million. Yeah, whatever their budget was, do you know, well under 3% of the budget went to deal with homosexual issues. Well under 3%. So here's the obsession. The obsession is the moment we take a stand on an issue, the moment we say something about an issue, there's all this massive focus on it as if that's the only thing we do. Some gay activist challenged me. He said, well, you're spending all this time calling on for public rallies against homosexuality, and what are you doing about other issues or about teen sexuality? I said, what are you talking about? Calling for public rallies, I've been involved in a few, mainly outreaches to gay pride events, okay, which I'm very glad to call for public rallies to get involved with that, to reach out to the homosexual community in the midst of a gay pride event and tell them God has a better way, by all means. But I said, day and night, I'm dealing with issues about family, marriage. I'm dealing with issues about sexual purity. I'm ministering to young people. It's got nothing to do with homosexual. Day and night. Our missionaries around the world are preaching the gospel to people day and night and helping the poor. And day and night, we have folks who are dealing with sex trafficking. Day and night, we have folks who are focusing on pro-life and abortion issues. Day and night, we have other folks who are focused on reaching out to the Jewish people with the gospel. Day and night, we have folks who are focused on reaching out to the lost in America, and on and on and on and on and on. Day and night, we have people who are focusing on issues about purity of life and fighting against divorce and so on and so forth. And we also stand against gay activism and reach out to the homosexual community as part of the gospel and part of our calling. There are organizations like the Human Rights Campaign. And by the way, I didn't plan to say all of this up front, but I guess I'm overflowing with some of these things in my heart, hence they are coming out. You have organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, which is actually the Homosexual Rights Campaign, which is fully their right to do what they're doing, but just improperly, misleadingly named. They have a budget of $35 million or so, every dime of which goes for gay activism. And I could go down the list with other organizations with $5 and $10 million budgets, and they exclusively exist for the purposes of gay activism. There's not a single major Christian organization. The one that I know that just focuses on this is run by one individual, and I don't even know how he pays his personal bills because there's almost no money that comes in through this. So the obsession is with the media and others focusing on this, or the moment you take issue with gay activists focusing on this, is that this is the only thing you do. Not true. Not true. Not true. However, the larger question was still, do you think we've marginalized ourselves? Do you think evangelicals have just become known as one or two issue people? You know, we're known for, we stand for pro-life. We're known that we stand against same-sex marriage. Maybe we're known for one other thing. Maybe we're religious fundamentalists, you know, whatever. But have we marginalized ourselves, or have we actually played a very important role in the recent elections? And what should our role actually be? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I do want to talk a little bit more about what our relationship to government should be. I want to talk about how we should respond to polls and peer pressure and assessments of what's happening in society. And I want to ask a question which has been on my mind and is really going to open a hornet's nest. But, hey, we gladly do that, and then we get some wisdom in it. We don't just have heat. We have light here on the Line of Fire. But when you were voting, maybe you're a white voter, maybe you're a black voter, Asian voter, Hispanic voter. When you were voting, if when you were voting, it was kind of mixed racially at the voting places, the voting booths, voting polls. Did you feel there was any racial tension? Did you feel anything of, if I'm voting this way, boy, people are going to think this is me against them? Or did you feel any of that in the air? I'm just curious. I'll tell you why I'm asking when we come back. 866-34-TRUTH. A whole lot to come. Oh, and a reality check from India before the show is out. Is it true? Have evangelicals marginalized themselves? Are they no longer a voice in the culture, no longer a political voice? Is it true that Republicans completely left out moral family values in their platform, that the Tea Party has really got nothing to do with evangelicalism, or are evangelicals playing a major role in politics? And one more question, what should our influence really be in society? Michael Brown, thank you for joining us today on the Line of Fire. The number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Go to the website. Make sure before the day is out, you visit AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org, and watch my debate with Rabbi Shmuley on homosexuality. Really, you don't want to miss this debate. It's available free online. When you watch, if you can make a contribution to help us with the expenses of the webcast and the video, that would be awesome and greatly appreciate it. You're sowing into good seed that is touching people around America and around the world, and you'll be blessed in the process as you do. All right, I've got a caller from Ames, Iowa, that I want to get on the line because this is one of the things I wanted to focus on. If we have lost our voice, if evangelicals are not being heard, if the focus on homosexuality is just an obsession and we're discrediting ourselves in the eyes of the world, how do you explain what recently happened in Iowa? Matt from Ames, Iowa, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Mike. I'm a Christian, and I feel like the right has used me on voting day, but has, you know, forgot about us in their actual, you know, push of more of a moral stance on things like abortion and things like that. And I feel like our vote was used in Iowa to get rid of these three judges. Based on some sort of other, just basically to win back those seats in the courthouse, when in reality maybe they didn't care so much about my moral opinion, but they just wanted to win on election day. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, I can't speak for the other justices involved, but I can say, Matt, that let me address your larger issue first, and I'd like to hear from other callers about that too, and that is. Do you feel used, if you're listening to the broadcast, do you feel used by, say, the Republicans or the conservatives or the right, that they get our vote, but then they don't act on our issues? They get our vote because they say they're pro-life or they're against same-sex marriage, but then they really follow their own agenda and don't stand for our issues. So do you feel used? I'd like to put that question out also. But to answer yours specifically, Matt, I think the Iowa situation is one of the shining points in America to say, if you're going to do something radical, activist, really unconstitutional, if you're going to act irrationally as judges, we're going to take action. And what happened in Iowa, when seven Supreme Court justices voted 7-0 to say that there was a constitutional right to same-sex marriage with a ridiculous opinion, parts of it I read brought up issues that were completely unrelated and then completely missed those issues. I mean, it was a horrific opinion. Since the 60s now, when voters could say, okay, we want a justice out, this is the first time it's happened. And the three that were up for election, they're out. And that's the people of Iowa saying to those judges, you don't do this. You don't have the power to rewrite the Constitution and rewrite morality and rewrite marriage. You're going to be held accountable. So I actually think, Matt, that this is a message to the nation That's how it's being heard. That if you're going to be an activist judge and write ridiculous opinions that try to redefine marriage and family, we're going to vote you out. And this is a first, and I think it's significant. Now, the next thing is to pray for righteous judges. In other words, I have no idea if the people replacing them are any better, or that you know what I'm saying. That's the bigger question. But I actually think this is one of the shining points in the elections, because it's unprecedented, and it's really sending a message. So how does that sound to you as someone living in Iowa?
Well, that sounds good. I hope that it can continue with the rest of the judges and with the rest of the country and with the Senate and the House. Overall, I just feel like evangelicals are being used overall through our nation and through the right wing. And I'll take the rest of your answers off the air. I appreciate your time.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thank
yeah, I had that on my list of one of the things to focus on. That, again, if you're not familiar, to the shock of America, and again, this was not voted on by the people of Iowa, and how this got in there really was a gay activist strategy. Again, they believe they're doing the right thing. They believe that they are being deprived of a fundamental right, which everyone else has, which is a right to marry. They believe they're being discriminated against. They believe it's a matter of equality. They believe it's a matter of tolerance. I understand that, and I profoundly differ with them and say that they really need to know the Lord in his ways and be changed by him and helped by him. That being said, what happened in Iowa was an outrage. Seven justices voting to redefine marriage, 7-0. And again, the opinion, the official opinion was horrific. The reasoning and finding a constitutional right and so on. And even, as I said, bringing up bogus side issues and then mistreating them on top of it. It's like, who do you think you are? Who appointed you to do that? So the people in Iowa saying, absolutely not. See, let me tell you, I personally believe that there is a backlash coming. There is a backlash coming. It's been rising for some years. We see it in the elections here. I personally feel there is a backlash coming against the aggressive gay activism. At the same time, I'm believing that the church is going to be mobilized to pray and fast for the homosexual community like never before. And I believe there's going to be a harvest of souls. Now, you say, and I'm just going to stick on this point for 1 minute and then get back to my larger topic of the day. You say, but as long as you take a stand, a social stand, about an issue, you will alienate the people. So we cannot, as the church, take a social stand. Nonsense. Nonsense. Listen. Aren't there lots of women? Aren't there? Think about this with me, all right? Aren't there lots and lots of women in America who have had abortions, who feel passionately that they should have the right to have an abortion? And when we say we are pro-life, when we say abortion is the murder of a child in the womb, that we are alienating them from the church, theoretically? Does that stop us from trying to save babies? No. Maybe some that are trying to be politically correct, or that are compromised, or that are man-fearers or man-pleasers. Maybe. But as far as our philosophy, no, we don't draw back from reaching out for the lives of the unborn and reaching out to help the mothers and the fathers. We don't draw back from that for fear that we're going to alienate them, because it's a matter of justice, and it's a matter of mercy, and it's a matter of compassion, and it's a matter of salvation and deliverance making its way into society. And it's a matter of speaking up for what is right. So, no, you can't. You can't come against same-sex marriage, because then you'll be viewed as a hater. Why? Because the world's going to paint us as being hateful. And gay activists are going to paint us for being hateful. So what are we supposed to do? Roll over and die? And here's the deal. Until we affirm someone in their sin, they're never going to feel welcomed by us anyway. Wake up to reality, friends. All right. A lot more to come. Yep. I'm on a bit of a soapbox. I'm feeling it today. We'll be back. Hey friends, welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, So glad to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Have evangelical Christians marginalized themselves? You know, what's very interesting, I found some information I just was not familiar with. I was looking when the Republicans came out with their platform some weeks back. I was looking for a list of moral issue statements, things like that, and I didn't find that. And I thought, oh boy, many years ago when they came out with their Contract with America, that was much more morally based. Well, in point of fact, I was wrong. I was wrong in my recollection, and I was wrong on a certain level about the current statement. Now, I want to make clear, I am not looking to the Republican Party to reform America, nor am I looking to the Democratic Party to reform America. If reformation is going to come, it's going to come through the people of God living godly lives and influencing society and making disciples and speaking up for what's right and doing what's right. That's how reformation would come to society. One of the purposes of the Line of Fire broadcast is to spur revival in the church to lead to reformation in the society. That's what Jesus' revolution to me is all about. God's people being changed, God's people going out and changing the world. That's why it is our daily role here on the broadcast to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity so that we can be changed and go and change our world. That being said, I am calling on politicians to do what is right. Again, curious to know if any of you feel used by the Republican Party or if the Democrats have gotten you to vote based on Christian principles. You feel used, but it's mainly evangelicals and Republicans. That's where it would fall. That there's an appeal made, we're going to stand up for righteousness, we're going to stand up for moral causes, etc. And then once elected, they don't do those things. But here's what I found fascinating. I went back and looked at a headline, Evangelical Leader Expresses Disappointment with GOP Pledge, but Says It's Satisfactory. The article by John Ward in the Daily Caller, September 23rd, said Family Research Council President Tony Perkins released a statement Thursday morning on the House Republicans' leadership pledge to America. Well, I have some disappointment that the pledge to honor the values such as traditional marriage were not more clearly defined within the document. This is a significant improvement over the 94 Contract with America, which was silent on the moral issues. I didn't realize it, that it was silent on the moral issues. He says the pledge is not exceptional, but it is satisfactory. And here's how the pledge starts. We pledge to advance policies that promote greater liberty, wider opportunity, a robust defense, and national and economic prosperity. We pledge to honor families, traditional marriage, life, and the private and faith-based organizations that form the core of American values. You know, I read different sections of it looking for specific statements, but actually passed by focusing on that opening statement. Traditional marriage, so that's a strong statement saying we oppose same-sex marriage. And life, which is specifically talking about abortion-related issues and broader. So actually, there was more in the pledge than I realized. Now, will they carry it out? That's another subject, another question. What I feel is really important is this, that we define what our role should be as Christians in society, what the government's role should be, and how those two intersect. And I'm going to expand on that for a moment. I also want to come back to explain why I raised the question about racial tension. But first, let me take another call. Susan in Gastonia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi. I feel like not only should Christians be loving other people enough to tell them when they're wrong and to tell them when they're headed toward hell, but my friend recently told me that her fiance, who lives in France, was reading a study about the effects of hormones, and I was listening to Hillary Clinton and some other politicians talking about how these kids in school who are homosexuals shouldn't be bullied. Well, that's true, and I don't think anybody should be bullied, but if they care about them so much, then I think that they should not be allowing the hormones that are making these kids to have hormonal, complications that are confusing their bodies and, making them have these same-sex attractions and stuff like that, I don't think they should be allowing them to be put into our food supply. And I just feel like that's something else that a lot of people don't know, and a lot of people need to know, because it's, I think, I mean, these kids that recently killed themselves, I think they were so confused. They probably wanted to do what was right, and, you know, they were being bullied by somebody, and I would never call a Christian a bully. You know, if someone's bullying someone else, they're not a Christian if they're calling themselves a Christian.
Yeah, and let me just jump in, Susan. We have to do whatever we can as parents, as educators, as leaders, as examples, to say bullying is wrong, treating people with disrespect is wrong, and setting an example. Kids are going to learn most of all from what they see in the home, how their parents interact with people who are different, whatever that difference is, whether it's a moral difference, whether it's an ethnic difference. And they're going to watch us, and they're going to model behavior that they learn from us. So, it's very, very important that we set a tone of grace and love, that we're not bashing people, that in our private talk we're not speaking in demeaning ways about others, that in our actions and conduct we're walking in love. At the same time, we are creating a dangerous environment. The media contributes to this, and then much in the school system contributes to it. Kids who are younger and younger identifying as gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, now they're going to come out at 12 years old. This is only going to create a confusing atmosphere in the schools. This is only going to create a potentially hostile atmosphere in the schools. The solution is not to get society to accept homosexuality or to embrace it or to nurture it. The solution is to walk in love towards all people and to set examples of righteousness and morality and say, you know, there is a better way. Let me get back to one other issue. I just don't want to leave this hanging out there. I've mentioned many times my deep surprise a few years ago when Mr. Obama, who was then Senator Obama, was in the primaries, and I began to take issue with some of his stances. I'd first taken issue with something Senator McCain had said. Then I started to take issue with some of the stances of Mr. Obama. And I got a call from someone saying to me, why do you always have to bring up race? I said, what are you talking about? I said, what do you mean bring up race? I said, all you're doing is bashing Obama. I said, well, first, I just took issue with a couple of things you said. I actually checked the shows, and it was a total of three shows in months and months and months where I'd actually even mention his name. And I said, but it has nothing to do with black or white. Here's a black candidate. I like what he stands for. Black candidate I don't like. Here's a woman. I like what she stands for. Here's a woman. I don't like what she stands for. It's got nothing to do with black, white, male, female. But I realized that this was such a sensitive issue that I needed wisdom in how I approached it, not to compromise, but to try to get everyone from different races and backgrounds to hear me so we could have discussion. That continues to be on my mind, and I actually think that race issues were on the mind of voters, even though they were not the issue at all. This vote had zero to do with race, in my viewpoint. Feel free to call in and differ with me. And yet I think, because all the talk of it, people were actually feeling it a little bit in the air. What do you think of that? I just spotted a neat comment on the Ask Dr. Brown site I want to share with you in a moment. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. Actually, the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. We've been talking about whether evangelical Christians have marginalized themselves in society, and if so, why? Did we marginalize ourselves politically? I've got a bunch of comments about that, some insights I think that'll be helpful. But let me tell you something neat. This blessed me. We worked for a couple of years with the Inspiration Network and put out, I think, 18 episodes of Think It Through. Each one that's now being put on our website. This is a unique Jewish Christian TV documentary outreach program, one of the most amazing things I was ever part of. And I'm not trying to sell you anything right now, because you can watch these for free online, and we'll have all 18 DVDs available very soon, which will be a great resource, holiday gift, and Jewish outreach tool. But whenever we're getting a new one that is being posted online, we're letting folks know first on Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. So make sure you're signed up there, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. So I just saw this little note. Thank you for these segments, Dr. Brown. I use them in my homeschooling. That's cool. Thank you. And one other thing. During the debate with Rabbi Shmuley Monday, I was challenged by him, you know, back away from your position. You're saying that consensual acts between two gay men are no better than consensual acts between a grown brother and sister. I said, correct. I'm saying that. I have a scriptural basis for saying it. They're both wrong. That being said, my own sin is just as bad as, if not worse, than the sin of homosexuality, etc. So that's not the issue. Anyway, I could care less as to how I look in the eyes of society. I care less as to how I look that people are going to think, oh, he's culturally relevant. Oh, he's out of step. Oh, he's too strong on that. You've got to modify. Listen, you modify your message to appease people, you lose the blessing of God. We use wisdom, yes. We speak with compassion, yes, but we do not back away from the proclamation of the cross and for upholding biblical righteousness. And there was a statement I made which someone listening to the debate transcribed and posted on the Ask Dr. Brown page, which was this. So I am quoting myself with approval. I would rather be marginalized by society, called a raving lunatic, and honored by God than bow down and kiss the feet of this generation. So I believe that if we have been marginalized, evangelicals, it is because we have not done what we're supposed to do, which is preach Jesus loudly and clearly. Instead, we've been part of such a compromised, watered-down, man-pleasing message. In the aim of being relevant, we become irrelevant. Not only so, we have had so many scandals in our own midst. We have been guilty of so much hypocrisy. We have said one thing and done the other that we've lost a moral voice. We've lost moral clout. We've lost the ability to speak with power to the society because God doesn't back hypocrisy and because people don't respect hypocrisy. If we've become marginalized to the extent that we have, it's not because we're standing up for pro-life, standing up for the unborn. It's not because we're standing against the perversion of marriage in the name of same-sex marriage. No, it's because we're not being consistent. It's because we're being hypocritical. It's because we're not walking in the power of the Spirit. It's because of our many divisions between us. It's for other reasons. It's because we fail to really preach Jesus to society and be disciples and make disciples. Those are issues that are paramount. As for standing for what's right, now let's think this through. Let's think this through for a minute. We vote for politicians to do what they're supposed to do, okay? And there are a whole lot of other issues in terms of social justice, in terms of economic justice, in terms of fairness, in terms of national defense. I mean, there are millions of issues. I'm glad I'm not called to be responsible. As much as I take issue with the president, if I was the president, we'd be in a whole lot worse state because I'd have no clue what to do with 99% of these issues, all right? Although, hopefully there'd be a different voice of righteousness, but that's another story. But please hear me. We vote for government officials to do what they're supposed to do, and we take responsibility for that, and to the extent that they are acting on moral issues and social issues, we call them to do what's right and hold their feet to the fire, or we get elected ourselves and we can't do anything beyond that. But then that's a tiny part. We're supposed to, 99.9% of the rest of it is how we live in society. 99.9% of the rest of it is how we impact society, how we shine as lights in dark places. Am I making sense? We come back, a reality check from India. All right, time is short. Got a lot to cover, so let me dive right in. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us. Remember, tomorrow you've got questions. We've got answers. As we've been talking about America, as we've been talking about the relevance of evangelicals in society, etc., I just want to give us a reality check. I'm not going to get to Africa today. I had a couple of notes, one from India, one from Africa. These are dear friends, folks we work with in in India. They were blessed when some of you contributed to help their ministry. And if you'd like to get behind what they're doing, LNC, as in Love and Care, LNCMinistries.org. Go online, support their pastors, support their orphans. I worked with these folks 17 straight years now, 17 out of the last 18 this December. Persecution continues in Orissa. This is a note I received last week. Last Sunday, 24th October, Hindu radicals entered a church and roughed up the two pastors, threatened the church members, and stopped the church service. Then in the middle of Sunday night, they returned and severely beat the pastors, once again telling them they must not hold any more church services. Then last night, we received this horrible news. This past Thursday, the 28th of October, one of our pastors and his wife, along with a young lady in their church, were all beaten severely. They were seeking to bury the one-and-a-half-year-old daughter of this young lady who had died with a stomach tumor. Think of that pain already, trauma you're living with. But Hindu radicals came and stopped them with swords, sticks, and other weapons because they didn't want a Christian burial in their village. The mother of the dead child was also 8 months pregnant, had not eaten for a few days because she had been in the hospital with her sick child and was cruelly kicked in the stomach and began bleeding heavily. The three of them and the decomposing dead body of the child were forced to hide in a house for many hours and could not leave because the radicals were still in the village waiting to kill them if they left. Finally, by the grace of God, we heard they were able to escape and reach a hospital in a nearby village in our ministry, along with another, are financially helping this lady to receive medical care. At this point, we don't know the further condition of the mother and child. And then I got this email today from our friends that we work with there. One more note. A Christian was kidnapped 11 days ago by communists from a church in, can't pronounce it, probably shouldn't say the name either, where our ministry and pastor so-and-so are, and last night he was killed. Keep praying. These are folks we work with. These are folks out on the front lines of preaching the gospel. These are folks literally giving their lives for the cause. Let's examine our own lives and ask ourselves how we are living. And if you'd like to be a blessing to folks who, $30 a month, you can support a pastor full-time preaching the gospel in tribal villages in India, or you can support an orphan full-time for money like that, go to lncministries.org. L as in love, N as in N, Nancy, C as in care, loveandcareministries.org. And tell them that you were listening to the Line of Fire and wanted to help them. All right, here's my bottom line for today. The moment we try to make ourselves culturally relevant and thereby downgrade our message, thereby try to sophisticate our presentation of Jesus, thereby try to make ourselves lovable, likable, of appeal to the world, we have now departed from the foolishness of preaching, from the foolishness of the message, from the power of the gospel. We have retreated from the reproach of the name of Jesus in the name of making him more popular. It never works. It was not the Jesus method. It was not the method of John the Immerser, his forerunner. It was not the message of Peter or Paul or any of the apostles, and has not been the message of the church that has brought about change. We speak with wisdom. We speak with love. We speak with compassion, but in the fullness of the Spirit, we speak and act the truth. And that, my friend, is how we will be relevant to the society and avoid being marginalized. The power of the truth of the gospel.